Paul Lambert und Karl-Heinz Riehle 1:0 für Borussia Dortmund.
Meine Damen und Herren.
And welcome back to another episode of the German Football Podcast in what is a new era for the GFP, I'd say, as we sort of begin our first of the thematic episodes, our first deep dive that we promised you last month. And we're kind of moving away from the week-to-week review of each game in the Bundesliga, Zweite Bundesliga, Dritte Liga, Regionalliga, talking about me getting sent off in the Kreisliga, because we were starting to find that quite boring all in all. We kind of thought, if we're finding it boring and tedious, then it's probably even worse for anyone listening. So like we mentioned last month, we're kind of going to look to do some deep dives into some any aspects of German football that we might want to talk about might be related to the week just gone. So, I mean, we all have noted how Bochum struck Wolfsburg further into their crisis this week with a 1-0 win. So I believe I'm informed by Robert that we might be doing a podcast with a special Bochum guest in the coming weeks. But this week we have a very interesting, exciting episode, which Roy and I have had in the pipeline for a while, I'd say, where we're going to talk about what it's like working in German football media, because Roy and I both do. Robert, of course, used to. He was Roy before Roy was in Roy's job. And, you know, Colin himself contributes to Get German Football News and is a very regular contributor to Help Fear. And Ronan is probably one of the more accomplished among us all, not so much in German football, but in sports media. He's doing very well for himself. So probably we realize we've not got many talents, but we might be able to talk about this and sort of give our own view on what it's like working in German football media. So for that, very lucky to have a special guest, our first special guest of this little new era for us, a colleague of mine, also an international traveler at the moment, seems to be all over the place. Holland last week, Berlin at the weekend. I believe you're back in Cologne now. I've got Chris. How are you getting on? Welcome to the pod.
Yeah, good, thanks, mate. Yeah, international traveler. Yeah, I've definitely been a bit all over the shop in the last few years, but yeah, for sure. Thanks for the intro, mate.
That's all right, and you're heading off to Argentina soon, is that right?
Yeah, so going to China at the end of the month towards the end of the month for the Olympics, for the Winter Olympics. Going to be out there for a few weeks, and then flying back to Germany, and then pretty much going straight to Argentina from there for about 3 months, because my missus is from there, so we're going to see her family for a bit.
That's I'm very jealous, given the fact I'm currently resided in my childhood bedroom and can't get back to Germany at the moment. So
it's a great bedroom. I'm just still slightly concerned.
This is my office / basement. Right. So yeah, I do manage to get through that throughout the house, but not much further. Definitely not back to Hamburg right now, which is where my other co-host right now, Roy, is resided. Are you missing me? I was on the phone to you for about 30 minutes last night. You telling me how much you missed me. How are you getting on about me over there?
I think you'll find that sentence lasted 2 seconds of a 30-minute conversation, which definitely was not about you. But yeah, anyway, it was good to speak to you again. Of course, definitely missing you over here. Having to swap and change who I watched the Bundesliga with, but the Bundesliga last week, I had to swap and change who I was watching it with. It wasn't you coming and stealing my Sky Ticket account to come watch it, to do your own work. So yeah, it's great. Like, I do miss that part of you. I can't wait for you to come back to steal my Sky Ticket account, basically.
I think you'll find it's a more mutual relationship we've got there, as you do have my DAZN account. So it works both ways, my friend. And I have
which one's more expensive?
I think DAZN, because DAZN is Friday and Sunday on the Bundesliga.
Yeah, but I definitely pay more money than you.
maybe I'm getting better value then.
Welcome to the last episode of the German Football
League. Are you going to let me with it?
This is prime time viewing this.
This is maybe informative.
So like we said, today we're going to be having a little chat about working in German football, sort of sports media, our own experiences, sort of the things people might not know, a little look behind the scenes, and we might look ahead to the future where we think that the world of German football media is going. So when I was thinking about this question, it kind of sounds like I'm on Piers Morgan's Life Stories here. But Chris, I was going to ask you to take me back to the start of your journey as into where you are now as a freelance copywriter, journalist, social media editor, web editor. How did you get into that? Because I think a lot of people that are listening to this, and we're going to post some links in our Twitter thread with the podcast, I was kind of wondering how you make that first step into working into sports media.
I guess my own personal background, I started writing about football when I was about 15. I wrote for a Plymouth Argyle kind of vital football website. I did a few articles for them. I just wanted to write, basically. I loved going to watch Plymouth Argyle. I've got a Plymouth Argyle shirt on just to spoil your George, since they're playing Chelsea in the FA Cup in a few weeks. Ryan Hardy's going to steal the headlines. So I was writing for them when I was about 15, 16. And then I started instead to write about music and did loads of blogs on new music and stuff. So I kind of left football behind for a while. And then I went to university to study journalism. But all I wanted to do was music journalism and radio. I kind of had just left football as just something I enjoy on a Saturday or whatever and going to play. To kind of cut a long story short, I started doing writing jobs 3 or 4 years ago. I decided that what's the thing that I know kind of most about, and it is probably football. When I say that I'm an expert, I'm really not, but it's kind of go where your strengths are, if you know what I mean. And I followed football since I was 3 years old. So I was very fortunate to get land the gig with the Bundesliga 2 years ago, doing their socials. I've been doing it ever since, now doing stuff for the website, doing stuff for the Olympics as well. So, it's gone quite well. But in regards to the second part of your question, sorry, because I know I have been chatting for what feels like 10 minutes. My advice to people who are just wanting to get into it, whether you're, 30 years old, 40 years old, or 15 years old, is just start doing it. It sounds simple enough, but it's so easy to set up your own WordPress, your own blog, and you want to write about something, go and write about it, and then just tweet about it, and if you're good, and then it will work out.
Yeah, I find you hear that with a lot of people who work in sports media, is that they find that they've somehow kind of tripped and fallen over backwards into their current area they work in, which also often happens to be area that they're most interested in, but for whatever reason they might have thought that they can't, if that's what I really enjoy doing. But it's a competitive field, as we all know, to get into working in football media. But this, you sort of, I can't say, I probably only myself really about 18 months ago really decided this was what I wanted to do, but I never really had a plan. I sort of just thought, I'm just going to keep doing this, things in my spare time, like you said, writing on blogs, volunteering, which I'll come on to you, Roy, I know you were doing that as well. And before you know it, doors kind of end up opening for you if you kind of just stick at it. And it doesn't often feel like you're kind of just plugging away trying to get a job, because you're kind of just doing what you enjoy doing. I mean, Roy, I know you were, was your first kind of gig was volunteering with the Braves, was it not? Is that how, that's oh, how you that-
No. For me, it's a bit long. A bit longer.
Maybe I skip the first chapters of your autobiography.
That's the best parts as well. But yeah, for me, I ended up, I'm not going to go right into everything, but I ended up moving from a music degree into television production at college thing, and it was basically as you would imagine, like, as I always describe it, it's like how you imagine this morning has been filmed, like all the cameras and stuff. That's the best way to describe it. I can't think of anything else to describe it. And I hated it. Like, I realised it wasn't for me. And I remember speaking to my lecturer one day and he just was like, "What do you like?" And I was like, "Football." I was like, it's generally the only thing I was interested in. And he turned, it was just luck that I spoke to him, because he turned around and was like, "Oh yeah, I used to do this filming thing at Park Thistle Football Club in Glasgow." And like, you know, you can do that. I was like, "All right, like, how else did, like, you know, actually think about it, but how, like, when you're younger, but how else does it go on the TV? Someone's filming it, someone's doing the media behind it." It took me so long to fucking realize that I was like, "Oh shit, yeah." So, like, I think within a week, I was like, "Oh, I support St Mirren. I'm going to just email St Mirren." And then 2 days later, I was on the pitch side filming a game. It was mad. It was just, like, so crazy how it went from, like, not knowing what I wanted to do within a week. And I was like, fuck, that's amazing. So I ended up volunteering at St Mirren filming for a good, like, maybe 10 months, not really a full year. It kind of went from one end of the season into the start of another season. So I did that for a year and then ended up, because I was obviously voluntary, I was looking for other things, and most of the media stuff in Scotland is voluntary. It's really hard to get a paid gig in Scotland for that, unless you're working with one of the high-end teams or you've got a lot of experience. And then I managed to grab this gig, do it. It was like it seems like the most boring job ever, and it generally kind of was. But I got to watch the game. I ended up getting like £100 a game to go to Motherwell to basically plug in the live stream for their own, like, overseas, like, Motherwell TV, and I basically plugged in the stream, pressed live, and if they scored, I put one in. If they, like, they scored two, I pressed, I put two in. Generally me for the whole game. But, like, you know, it was meeting people that kind of got me through that, and it wasn't, like, it seemed like a pointless task in the end, but it was actually quite an important part of, like, where I ended up going to. After that, I ended up deciding, I was like, I think I can do a bit more than this. I think I can put everything that I've learned from these two jobs and put it together and, like, make something. Emailed every club in Scotland, literally all 42 of the top, like, teams, just emailed them all saying, "Do you have a voluntary job?" Like, they even asked for a paid gig. And what became the Caledonian Braves, they were going through the transition at the time. They were very keen to kind of get someone to help out. And they were like, "Yeah, well, let's get you down for a game and you can watch and just see what happens." And then that was me. I volunteered for a month and then I got a full-time job out of it. So it's all just about persistence, I found, with me. So I ended up at the Braves for just about a year and a half, which is just before I decided to go to Germany. Germany, I started writing for Get German Football News for a bit. It wasn't so long, but it was just to get me back into the aspect of it. I did a lot of blog stuff myself, and then I ended up graciously meeting Robert and got the job at Hasfal. Obviously, I got the job for, like, other reasons as well, but Robert was a nice big impact in that. So, sorry, I just told you my life story there.
You could have just skipped all the volunteering stuff and just met Robert earlier, and I could imagine
I met Robert Haggis a lot earlier. One, my life would be fuller, my life would be more exciting, and I probably would have. Well, I wouldn't have had the job at the time. He would have had the job, but, you know. Yeah.
Depending on how much earlier, you might have met him in Reading, and then you might still be in Reading.
We could have fought for the job, you know.
Just circling back to, like, a point you made though, like, regarding, like, volunteering and everything. Like, there's so many football clubs, big or small, out there. Like, even if it, let's just say it was social media that you wanted to do, like, you know, something that the three of us, like you said, are experienced in. But, like, if it's social media you wanted to do, you could literally, like, find your local sports club. It doesn't even have to be football. Like, you can just go and do, like, there's plenty of places to volunteer. If it's not in your town, then in someone else's town, there's, like, someone who needs a volunteer. And, like, that's not a bad place to start to get practice things, understand how things work, see what a client kind of wants, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, 100%. I always found that, yeah, I said about 18 months ago when I was looking at how do you sort of get into this field, it's always that thing of you need experience, but to get experience, you need experience. And so the only way into that really is through volunteers and volunteering, and volunteers often form the backbone of most clubs, really. I mean, I didn't actually realize you did that, Roy, because I did something very similar. But I kind of knew for quite a while that I wanted to be based in Germany. So I pretty much emailed every And at that point, I thought I wanted to move to Berlin because there was more of like a semi-pro amateur football scene in Berlin than there probably is anywhere else in Germany. So I sent an email and a CV to about six of the main amateur clubs in Berlin at the time, amateur sort of semi-pro. So Victoria, Tennis Borussia, Berliner AK, Lichtenberg, off the top of my head, probably a few more. I basically just said that this is my CV, this is what I can do. I don't really know what you would want me to do, but if you tell me, I can do it. And one of them, Berliner AK, I remember, who were probably the team that's making the most strides in the Regionalliga Nordost at the moment, actually said, we do actually have one open position. It's for the Stadionsprecher, like the person who is on the tannoy at the stadium. And I was like, yeah, I can't do that right now. I'm actually still at uni. But if you have any other options that would involve me not having to read out the starting 11 on a match day. But the main people I was working with was Tennis Borussia Berlin, which was good because a club I very much aligned with. They're very, very active in the in a lot of really important social causes. And they allowed me to translate some of their website, and I helped out with their German language social media as well, and hosted some of their live events on Facebook, like some which were really interesting live events talking about how to combat homophobia in football and things. And that all happened quite quickly. And then all of a sudden I could say that I've worked with a football club, and then you know, I was doing my own sort of blogging, like you guys said at the time. And it, sort of the more you get into it, the more you realize that I actually quite like and save myself here. Every time I'm volunteering, I'm gaining experience. And yeah, you end up opening quite a few doors, and you've actually gotten quite far. And people find that impressive. People find it, I think employers probably find it quite impressive if you've put a lot of work into something that you're not actually getting any money for. You're doing it for the enjoyment, as well as the fact that you do. You need some basis of voluntary experience, but like Chris said, it's very easy to well, I say easy, but if you send out a few emails, you'll be very surprised that the doors will open for you. If some club or whatever level will be willing to take you on as a volunteer, and you know, you might have to, if you start off as plugging the numbers in for the scoreboard, then you'll eventually make your way up.
Can I jump in there? Sorry. Quickly.
Yeah.
Can I address this a question that we had later that we already spoke about? But like, I think while we're bigging up voluntary experience, taking on voluntary jobs, I think it's also important to say to people, like, don't take something that's not worth a voluntary experience, because there's so many, I think you'll both agree, you've seen so many jobs that ask you to do so much. Was it the Birmingham City job last year that got quite big in social media? But not to dig out Birmingham or anything, but like they asked him for a full-time like social media manager or assistant to this social media manager, and it was full-time and it was unpaid. And like, as well, as good as voluntary jobs are, know your worth as well, I think, if we're going to go down the like giving advice.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, just before I started at the Bundesliga, I took a job for 2 weeks. This is when I just decided to switch to like football media, and I took it. I'm not going to name names because I'm not thick, but like, they were paying like 50 quid a day for like 10 articles, and like it was after like a week, and you think like, oh yeah, you're getting paid like 50 quid, that's not too bad. But like when it got to like I started work at like 8 a.m. and like wouldn't be finished until about like 2 a.m. and then would have to do it again the next day. And like you said, like, know your worth. Like if you think like you're worth, if you're giving a website 10 articles a day, it's probably worth more than 5 quid an article. And if you're volunteering, then you don't need to be there 6-7 days a week. Like you're their Saturday person or you're their Friday person, whatever, you know.
Yeah, like I think I just got lucky that with my voluntary job, it was worth the voluntary time. Like when I did it, Samarin, I came to film a game and I left. That's all I did, and that's voluntary. That's the equivalent of being voluntary. You go, you do your what they want you to do, and you leave. You're not there all day. And I think that's why I ended up getting offered the full time job with the Caledonian Braves at the time, was that we saw that I was kind of a trial period, let's just say. And then it came into, it was like, yeah, this is actually a full-time gig. And I was offered money from it, of course. But that's just something to kind of pick up on, because I quite like this being an informative kind of thing for people, because I would have loved to listen to something like this when I started out as well, especially when it's a foreign, like we all work in German football and we've all lived in Germany. George's currently not at the moment, but he's getting there. You know, like it's just it'd be quite interesting to hear like if it actually helped anyone. So I thought I would jump in with that bit in the volunteer stuff before you get cracking on with the next question, George. Just
yeah, no, it's a great PSA. It's a great parental guidance that you've offered there. I think it's really true though, because yeah, volunteers, as much as we have been bigging them up, do definitely get exploited, and they sort of take like, it is possible to be taken advantage of because they know how desperate people are to get experience and to sort of make that first step into the world of media and everything. So know your worth, but at the same time, there's definitely a value in plugging away as a volunteer. So I guess that must have been quite interesting for you, Roy, going from a non-paid position to a paid position. And how did you notice that you had a kind of change in mindset when that became your job? Did you kind of feel more empowered by that, or did you kind of make it less fun in any way? Or
not less fun, but I would admit that it took me a couple of months to realise what I was actually ended up doing, because I did so much of like voluntary work that ended up I was like the head of media. I was the only one working there at the time, and I was like, fuck, I actually need to do everything now. And I think it takes a bit of time to get used to that, because it's such a big mindful, and like your head gets quite, I don't know how you boys feel, but like it's one of those jobs that you can't really stop your head moving. Like your head doesn't stop rotating all day, and it keeps going and going and going, and you don't really understand that at the start, and especially if you're kind of thrown in the deep end. Not that I don't ever not appreciate my opportunity, but like I've totally thrown in the deep end at one point, and I think now I really appreciate it. But at the time, I was so confused. So it was different, I would say. The voluntary stuff was obviously like you're doing that because you know you want to try things out and you want to see where it's going. But once the full-time job came, that's when I went, okay, I can actually do this for a living. And once I got through that stage of confusion and, oh, wow, I need to actually do this, it just became it came natural. It didn't feel like I was working for a football club. It felt like a job then. And then this different mindset definitely came afterwards. But it wasn't such, it was more of a slow change for me into that.
Yeah, I know. I think for me, working for the way football media is now, working in social is kind of, for me, a more of an amalgamation of skills which would previously have been separated amongst different people, whereas now there's only one person for that job. So I think social also kind of gets looked down on in a way, for whatever reason. But like I said, I kind of feel like it's the combination of, you know, you can't just be a good writer, a good photo editor, a good video editor, a good videographer, whatever. You kind of need to be able to do a little bit of all of those things and do them pretty well to excel in a position. I feel like that is kind of not something that, when you said earlier, like you don't think about what goes into your match day feed on, you know, like that your Haarsvall Twitter feed or any sports media social account. You kind of just, and people have said that to me before as well, when I kind of explained to them what I do in my job, it's like you kind of just assume that this content just comes out of nowhere, and you don't realize that for Chris and I, we've got graphic designers that you have to talk to. We've got our different campaigns that you have to execute properly, and it's not straightforward at all, because like I said, you do have to, and you have to manage all of that. Chris and I were saying the other day, you have to do all these things really quickly under a lot of pressure, especially when you're working on a match day, and still make sure that the content that you're producing is good and worthy of you know, the amount of the followership that you've got and the expectation that the people hold you to. So I don't know if you do. For me, I'd probably say that's one of the biggest challenges of the job, is balancing all those things, getting all your edits or your graphics ready, and getting all your copy correct, and dealing with that pressure. I mean, especially as you both know, on a match day is probably the most difficult thing. I don't know if you'd agree with that, or you'd say there's a bigger challenge for you, Chris.
The copy aspect I don't find too difficult. I think my strength with the Bundesliga, is probably the writing aspect and the kind of creative aspect. I'm not a good photo editor. If you want me to edit photos, then prepare for some good laughter. I think on match days, I think the most important thing you can kind of remember just in our position is knowing your product. So knowing, all right, so in your example, you're for Hamburg, right? You're obviously, you want everything to be about Hamburg, and you want everything, all the fans to be, delighted when X scores or this person scores or whatever. From the Bundesliga's perspective, okay, so who are your stars? Okay, that's the first thing you look at in a match day. You look at who's the stars, and did they get a goal? Did they do something amazing? And then I think the process for me is then, okay, so maybe that person hasn't scored, or this person hasn't scored, or they're playing tomorrow. Okay, who can we get from a goal who is a star? Or someone to build on. Where's the story? Find the story. And that's where the kind of the journalistic instinct kind of comes in, find the story, and go from there. But on a match day, it's a completely different shift compared to a weekday shift. If you're doing a weekday shift and you've got time to prepare content in advance, then you can do things with copy that are really creative. You can do things with emojis and whatever that are creative, although fucking emojis. But when it comes to match day stuff, I do the Instagram a lot, and George normally does the Twitter when we're on together. You can sometimes produce some of your best copy in that moment, in a match day. The best thing that you're going to tweet over that all day is written in 30 seconds. You wrote it half-assed, and then I don't know if you guys do this. I always find myself doing this, but after a shift, I don't switch off. I then go back through all of the things that I've wrote. Firstly, making sure that I made no errors. Luckily, 9 times out of 10, I haven't. But then you go back through and you're like, okay, this bit of copy was good and this got good reaction. Okay, why did this get a good reaction? And, deconstructing your own shift. So you said, George, originally at the start of your point, or maybe it was you, Roy, it's not very switch off job. Even when I've got days off, I'm constantly looking at things that George has written, see what Duncan's written, see what's on the kicker in the day, where's the story, what can I do for next time, kind of thing. It's not much of a shift, switch off job.
Yeah, no, I think one of the biggest things for me, in our job at least, is that you can't switch off. And we were saying before we started recording that, once you've finished a shift, the shift isn't really over for you. You constantly go back and you're checking, because you do so many things at once, especially on a match day, that you don't actually really get a chance to check what you've just done. I remember last weekend when I was working doing Borussia Dortmund Frankfurt, and obviously that game ended in complete madness, and so I literally didn't get a second to stop for about 3 hours, and I was getting content out on Instagram and Twitter, and I look back and the best post I did at the time got about 35,000 likes on Instagram was one that I had to get out basically at the final whistle on Instagram, and that was just using whatever pictures, because as we all know, pictures famously take, the best pictures do not come through first, so I was just got through what pictures I could to sort of time them, because you want to react to the games as they're finishing. So got through what the pictures I could get through, and the copy that I had at the time. I then had to crack on for all the other things reacting to the game, and that one, like you said, ended up doing the best. It's definitely, Roy, that probably must be more so for you, given the fact that you are Haasfau English. I mean, Chris and I, we're a team of, there's four of us who are the editors, but it's just you, and I know you've always shown me the crazy DMs that you're getting on on your phone as the highest power count and all the different. And you're always, I always think that you can never really switch off.
No, and like I tried to, and I know, like I could probably say this on behalf of Robert. I know that's why one of the reasons he decided to leave the job was that it wasn't his. They didn't want that lifestyle. And he wanted to like enjoy his weekends, which he definitely does now, as me and you can both vouch for. But yeah, so I think it's just one of those things that just you like. You do. Like my phone goes off sometimes. Like it's like someone from Thailand messaging, so it's like the middle of the night or the middle of like whenever the message, like the time zones aren't, it's mucked up. And like, for instance, I'm getting some guy messaging me the other day asking me to go negotiate to give. To let young German players move to Rangers on loan, and I'm like, what do you think I do? I know I'm seeing Chris's face, and it's fantastic. Like, it just you can never stop because you just get all these mad like DMs are probably the worst part. Like, but I mean, sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's just really interesting people who want to can contact with the club.
The worst part is when like it's like. When footballers say weird things in the DMs, that's when you're like, oh, I can't really say that. But I got a few stories, but like, I'm not obviously allowed to share them. But like, there's, you know, some footballers are a bit, not what you would expect them to be like. Let's just say that.
No, definitely. Like, you don't expect, like, I don't know. I just didn't, my last job, there was no one really DMing us. And then I came here and I was like, all right, cool. We'll see what goes. And I've just got back catalogue of like, what happened in the last couple of months before I started that hadn't been really went through because no one really properly owned the account between me and Robert. And just, man, it's some of the things people are saying. So that's a weird thing. And your phone does go quite a lot. But I'm starting to, like, that's me in the job 5 months now. Yeah, 5 months fully. Going into this is my 6th month. And I've started to figure out where you slow down. Like, I get two days off a week, basically. And I just fit that round where I want to fit it round. So that's another good thing about the job. Like, the first thing they said to me was, this is, like, flexible. Like, the office hours are, like, 9:30 to 6:30. But, like, don't be in at 9:30 if you've got nothing to do at 9:30. Don't be in until 6:30 if you've done everything for the day. It can be a home office sometimes as well. It's quite flexible. So that's a good thing about me. But like the office hours are 9:30, 6:30. But obviously, as you both know, football doesn't run through a normal 9 to 5 or like 9:30 to 6:30 day. There's definitely things happen. Like there's like one thing I thought was going to get posted today, and like I've just found out it's not. So I've kind of been on edge for that, waiting for that to come out. That happens quite a lot as well. I think you guys will have the same thing that nothing always goes to plan. Like there can be a plan. You can make I make a weekly plan every week, and I don't know how many times I change that plan on the day. So I'll have something written in for like Wednesday. And I'll be edited Wednesday by putting Wednesday stuff in Thursday and then putting the new stuff for Wednesday into Wednesday, like the things I've actually done. So you can definitely get lost in it. It's not a bad thing for me. It's kind of something I enjoy. At the moment, I'm quite happy being in the club environment where I'm focused on one thing. I'm focused on HSV. That's all I think about. So like, but also, I've got kicker like notifications on my phone. If something comes up that has file or anything, I'm like, and I'd like, for instance, I didn't know it was coming to come out. I'm always looking at and reading it, and then I'm thinking, this is my downtime, and I'm reading about my work. So I don't know how you guys feel about that because you work for the full league, and that's harder to keep away from. Like on my off day, it's quite easy to keep away from HSV. Apart from if I go for a walk, there's just a HSV sign everywhere in Hamburg. I look at it and go, oh, my phone, and then bring my phone out, and I'm like, no, put my phone away, don't need my phone right now. So I don't know, that's kind of my look at it. It's quite difficult to take time away from it. I don't hate that at the moment. I don't think that's something Robert hated either, just to bring him back up after like mentioning him, but I think it's just something that he personally took a bit of relief from when he got away from that. So it definitely proves it's a job you need to be, if you want to do that lifestyle, you do it, but don't do it if you know you're not going to enjoy it, because it ends up just being a bit detrimental to you. And in some ways, your head as well, you know, it can definitely play with you. So I get lost in it, but I don't know, George, you kind of, you're one for like every time you tell me you stop working, and then I'm like, you stop working an hour ago, mate, and you're still working, you know?
Yeah. So I don't think I'm giving away any secrets of the league here, but so Chris and I, we're meant to work eight and a half hours at a time. Normally, you'll either start on a non-match day, you'll typically start at 9 and finish at half five. There are match day, you can sometimes start at 10 and finish at half six. You can start at 3:30, finish at midnight. And those shifts, when you finish at midnight, I can tell you, you don't just finish at midnight and you're like, right, that's that done. If you're trying to go to sleep immediately after you finish a shift, forget about it, because your brain has been like going through all the turmoil that you go through on a match day. And then it's very difficult to wind down. And like I said, switch off from that. And like I said, you're meant to work 8.5 hours a day, but you have to do what we have to do in a day. And sometimes that takes longer. Sometimes, I mean, one thing that probably is more relevant for us is that we're reliant on a lot of there's a lot of other pieces in this puzzle. It's not just us. We're a small piece in the whole Bundesliga. The thing that produces all the content, really. And you talk about moving the plan. We've got a plan as well. Then it's that, oh, we're the graphics people don't have this, so I have to change that around with that. We're still waiting on this for video production, or our sponsors like EA, they don't have this out right now. There's a delay in this. This video has been made too long, so it can't go out. And that is frustrating, because you kind of sometimes feel, oh, I'm doing everything I can, but then there's all these different moving parts that you're waiting on. And then it comes out as the consumer, as a normal person sees it. Oh, this is a post on my Instagram feed. And you kind of look at it when you kind of take a step back, and it's like, oh, this is so many moving parts of going into this one post that you see, or this, you know, this article or whatever. And I think it's also now, whenever I look at social media of any other sports club or team or league or whatever, you can never look at a post or a content or a campaign as in isolation. You also always see everything else. Roy and I, we've had countless discussions. We see something on social media and we think, oh, what do you think about this? How do you think about this team? So that in itself is also kind of difficult, because you're always kind of, I mean, we were saying about how we look back after a day of work to see, you know, how our stuff's been received. And to be honest, I'd love to say that you look in the comments and it's like, oh, I love this admin, great content, but realistically, half of it's
one ever says that to you, bro.
Yeah, no one knows. Half of it's bots of sexy women trying to sell me something, or just people commenting Farmers League.
Again, no one ever comments that on my one.
Yeah, so that's just when they realize it's me. But yeah, I mean, it is. You do realize that whatever you do, people are just always going to have an issue with the content that you're making. Especially, I mean, how countless times, it's just a joke as old as time. Bundesliga post saying, "Oh, Farmers League, there you go." You'll get the same similar things. Roy is Harsfowers, kind of a meme of their own, but I don't know. It's yes, like I said, the main thing is being able to switch off and kind of compartmentalize your work. But I think when you're good at what you do, that's also kind of difficult to do. I don't know.
I think I was gonna, like, hope you don't mind if I butt in, but like I think, like, what I've learned from doing this job for a couple of years now is that, like, people comment, people say nice things in the comments, people say nasty things in the comments. I think that, like, as long as you know you specifically have done, like, a good post, you've written things right, if you've written copy that you're like, if you like your own copy without being, like, big-headed, but if you, like, read something you've wrote and gone, like, I'm really happy with that, and then other people are happy with that, and then it gets received like that, like, it's such a win for the job. Like, I know we've been, like, saying about how kind of, like, difficult, like, certain parts of the job is, because, you know, just like any job, there's, you know, hard bits and there's easy bits, but, like, it's so rewarding when you produce something. There was like a I don't want to go go into like specific posts, but there was like a post I did about 2 months ago with Gerrit Holtmann's goal. I reposted it, basically his goal that he scored against Mainz, the one that won goal of the season for Bochum. And I did some like copy on that which went out on the like Twitter. It didn't do so well on Twitter, but it did like really, really well on Instagram because of like some copy that I'd written, and I was really, really like pleased of, like, concise, you know, didn't like oversell it, didn't use too much hyperbole, just, you know, really kind of got to the point, was entertaining, was funny. And then when you see that do well, that's where the rewards of the job completely are, like, you know, that it's so rewarding to see something that like loads of people kick off. It's, you know, it's what you're paid to do, you know, is to cause viral moments and stuff like that. Not with every single post that you do, but if you can kind of get to that point, then it's quite a rewarding job, and that from you get that dopamine hit, you know.
Yeah, no, the one for me is when you see the player, or usually the player that you've posted about, either like or repost it on their own story. Florian Wirtz is an absolute sucker for retweet, for reposting. Pretty much, if you ever tag him in something, he likes to put up on his story. Jude, my mate Jude does like that.
Your mate Jude.
But no, that's the one that gives me the buzz when you realize that the player themselves has read it and wants to share themselves. So I suppose a good question leading on from that would be, if anyone's starting out, if anyone's been given the reins of a small club as a volunteer doing their socials, what is a good piece of content, a good post look like to you? I mean, what are the like sort of key characteristics that, if you're trying to set something up quickly on a match day or whatever, what do you think that users, that consumers look for, that they find good in a piece of content?
I think for me, like, the first thing I always do now, it took me a while to kind of come up with this kind of mind frame, but I always look at every post, and before I post it, I look at it and go, am I posting that for the sake of posting that, or am I posting that because it means something? And that's just, I think that's one of the best pieces of advice someone's ever given me. You just, everything's got to have a purpose. Like, if you're just chucking out content willy-nilly, I've not used that phrase in a long time, for no reason, like, are you providing anything apart from looking like you're doing more work? Is something that I probably used to do as well. I think it's something you can learn from. I think it's, like, and the next part from that is, you've made something that's worth posting, you made something that's going to be an asset to not only your job, but also if you're working for a club, if it's going to be an asset for them, it's going to engage with people. Like, that's the next part, probably. Is it engaging enough? So I think for us, that's what most of our job is to engage with people and make people go, you're like, for you guys, is to look at the Bundesliga and go, that's not a farmers league. No, of course not. It's to go, like, this is the Bundesliga, and ingrain that in your head. This is what we provide here, and that's what the Bundesliga is, and that's what you guys do very well. Not to, you know, blow the trumpet, but, like, you know, just to point that out. And like, at a club, what you're meant to do is you're meant to get people to grab to. You're the person inside the club. You need to show them what it is. You need to have the essence of the club. So that's what the engagement, and the, for me, so it's got to have some sort of good engagement that you're making people understand what it is you're posting, and that post has to have some sort of good asset to the club. It can't be just, I'm chucking this photo out of, like, for me, for instance, I used at the start of past five, I was really bad at just chucking a photo out of Tommy Doyle, and Tommy Doyle hadn't played all week. But just because he's English and it's an international account, and it took me a while to get into going, you know what, that's not providing anything apart from people going, why is Tommy Doyle not playing? So, like, you end up having it has a negative impact because you're just chucking something out that you don't need. So, I don't know, maybe Chris can, like, come in, like, with more afterwards, or, like, join in with that. But I think for me, that's kind of the main points you need to think of before you post anything.
I think it's kind of like a weird kind of comparison that I could maybe say is that it's like you're the one with the megaphone at the protest, if you know what I mean. You're the one with you're the mouthpiece. So therefore, don't just chuck anything out. If, for example, if you're at a protest, like, you want to be the person that gets everybody on side, and, you know, you're the person shouting out all the stuff. If what you're saying is
like endless speech of facts, like people aren't going to take any notice. So like, you know, the copy is really important. Like, what words do you want to say, in especially with social media, and how few words as possible. You know, more long form content is completely different, but with social media, it is about being concise. I think it's also about being coherent as well. Like, you know, coherent with the product, with the fans, you know, keeping everything kind of on the same line, kind of like with every post. Okay, they posted that because they posted that before. If you know what I mean? If someone's going to look at it and go scroll through your feed, they're not going to be like, oh, why are they putting like a random save of a Zweite Bundesliga team like that I've never heard of and don't care about? Well, the reason is because this save is really good and like the previous goals and whatever have been really good. But so like you said, like when you just started with Tommy Doyle, like with the, you know, just chucking photos out, in some ways I can see why you did, because like it is a, you know, the interest in an international account, if you're doing it in English, is going to be on, you know, English speaking players and people that can kind of sell abroad and all that. So I kind of do see why you thought that way. But that, like, I also like thought that way when I first started with the Bundesliga. Like, you know, I was constantly posting about Lewandowski, Gnabry and Sancho all the time when I first started, when I only had like a shift a week or whatever, because you want to like make your mark. But it's when you kind of do a few shifts a week and you know, you're a bit more trusted with like a lot more other things on match days and everything else, that you can start shouting about other players, or, you know, like, but like, as long as you've got like a reason behind it, you can't just kind of go like on your own tangent and make it about you and go like, oh, like I'm going to post about Patrick Schick every other post because I'm a huge Patrick Schick fan. I think he's going to be the world's best. No, you can't do that. Like, you've got to like Patrick Schick is a poor example, but like, you know, it's not about you and your opinion. It's about like what's in front of you. So, you know, go look at the stats page, go look at like who people are interested in more, who's got the most followers on Twitter and all that. Like, I know it shouldn't matter, but it really kind of, it does a little bit with this game. Like, it's a numbers game, and you know, you have to win as many numbers as possible. Not that I see it like that, you know, I enjoy writing, so I enjoy like writing, but like that's how I assume like a lot of people like behind the scenes view it, you know.
Yeah, I think I pick up on a really interesting point you said. I think that it is so important to be, like you said, coherent and concise, because we live in an age where realistically, and we all work in football, and I would admit that I do not watch endless amounts of football. I watch the games on the match days I work on. I watch every Chelsea game, and I pretty much watch every 1860 game, but I can't claim to watch every Premier League game or every Bundesliga game when I'm not working, because firstly, lockdown taught me that I actually find football quite boring at times. And also, I believe it or not, I do have slightly better things to be doing in the weekend than being.
I swear I was like the only person who enjoyed like the lockdown football.
During lockdown, it made me realize that football is just, it's just 11 players playing against 11 other players. And there's actually no difference between watching that and like watching, like how I went last night to watch like the 8th division of English football. There's no, and it, I don't know. I felt the lack of fans made it difficult for me.
But in a way, like the pandemic, sorry to interrupt you, but like the pandemic has kind of like taught a lot of people that like when they were watching football on TV without fans and without, and whether it was fake noise or whether it was, you know, just the sounds of the pitch, like a lot of people rejected both of those. Mm. And now kind of go into your local game. Like I only know about like Cornwall's local viewing attendance figures for get, but like loads more people are going out and watching their local games now than mm-hmm. they ever used to be, because like a lot of people are rejecting that product on TV where it is just quiet, where it is just 11v11, and you know, yeah, who can score the most goals. Like, you know, it is all about the atmosphere and everything. But yeah,
I mean, yeah, Roy will know himself. I'm a bit obsessed with amateur football. I like whenever I can, I will, in Germany, will be watching any number of amateur games, just because this sounds awfully sort of overly romanticized and sort of cliche, but it's the little sound bites you get just when you're at like a local gamers or whatever, when you're there live, is just when you can hear the players swearing at each other, swearing at the ref, you hear the conversations on the terraces. It's just, that's for me what football's more about. But the reality is that we all represent another side of football, which is the more, you know, international side of things. We're, you know, representing one of the biggest leagues in the world, one of Germany's biggest clubs. In Roy's case, as much as I wouldn't want to admit that, as a Pauli sympathizer, but my point is that not many people watch every Bundesliga game, and their first point of contact on a Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening, to what result might have happened on that day, can often be a post that we put out. So we need to, in two or three sentences, be able to summarize what's happened in that game in an exciting way. And then people might go watch the highlights. They might go watch the evening game. They might tune in next Saturday. So we sort of carry a bit of a responsibility to entice people into wanting to, I don't want to say buy into, but, you know, take part in the product that we're sort of representing. And we need to, like I said, we're kind of that, because people check their phones and their Instagram feed all the time. And if you see, oh, Bundesliga just posted about how Dortmund came from 2-0 down to beat Frankfurt 3-2 in the 89th minute, you think, wow, I mean, this Bundesliga stuff's pretty exciting. I might go watch the highlights. So Jude Bellingham scored. That's pretty cool. He's English. I might watch Dortmund next time they play. And that's kind of, if you think like that every time you make a post and make a piece of content, then you'll drive yourself insane. But that's kind of a responsibility that we have, I suppose. And the other thing I just want to say about, when I was thinking about the question I asked, if I was to answer it myself, about what makes a good piece of content.
You were thinking about your own question?
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, I've asked you two this, and do I even have an answer myself? But the answer I always have, or the kind of mindset I always have, is would I, if I see this post I've just made, is there a potential that I would send it to a friend? If I viewed that, and it wasn't me who posted it, I saw it on another account, would I look at that and then like send it via DM to like one of my mates, but oh, look at this post, look at this goal, look at this, whatever. Because it's essentially about creating shareable content for me. So if every time you make a post, you kind of think, would I send this to a mate? Would I just, I'm sitting next to someone or whilst you're doom scrolling on Instagram, would I just show it to the person next to me, look at this? That's the kind of mindset I go into that with. But and we've also sort of touched on there, the difference between working on a match day compared to working to a non-match day. I mean, often for me and Chris, some of the non-match days can be as, if not more, stressful when you've got all the highlights of the weekend coming in or whatever. But generally, the match days where you make your money, the bread and butter of working in sports media. And I think it's probably quite a good conversation to have with us now, because it works very different between what we do and what Roy does. I mean, first of all, Roy's often almost always there in the stadium, so I think people probably quite interested to know, Roy, what it is you actually do on a match day. Because I know that it usually starts with you cycling to the stadium, because I accompanied you once.
It does, but again, George, it starts before that. Like, you there's stuff you don't see yourself. No, but like, it definitely starts. Like, it depends on the time of the match day, definitely. It doesn't change what time I start at on a match day, but it depends. So, for instance, the last game against Schalke was the top spiel. So it was the 8:30 kickoff in the Zweite Bundesliga. George, you'll know this because I met you after the game. I started that day at 9 o'clock in the morning. I finished at 1 a.m. By the time I ended up getting to George, it was about 1:30, I think. But that's just, it just depends. So we play on, like, so Hasfal will play on Friday, 6:30. I'll probably be working Friday from about 9 o'clock until maybe you're looking at more like 11, probably the latest by the time everything's done by the end of the match. it doesn't just go like, oh, they kick off at half one, you're done by four kind of situation. It, like, you go a lot longer than that. So, like, I don't know, a quick template on my day would be, like, it starts at 9 o'clock. I put out some kind of, like, it's match day kind of post thing to get people involved and go, like, we're actually playing today. What's your tip for the match day? Just kind of that engaging content. You got a couple other things about the match day where you can watch it abroad, because it's obviously a massive part of my job is getting people to watch Hasfal that's not in Germany and trying to gain the international viewers back from when they had their good days, because that's obviously quite a hard thing when a lot of international people probably don't care about Zweite Bundesliga football. And then you're looking at, depends when the match day comes, maybe take a couple hours if it's a late game, if it's an early game, you know, you go to the stadium about 2 hours before kickoff. And you're kind of in the zone from then. Well, that's what I like to do anyway. There's all the things you need to prepare, all the match day graphics you need to prepare. You need to be ready for when the lineup comes out to you to then put it out at a certain time. You just, there's so much things that it's all about preparation, and it'll make the day flow, but it doesn't make the day less busy. It doesn't make the day less hard. And then, for instance, so my routine now that I've got into on a match day is 1 hour before kickoff, we put our lineup out, and then after that, I go straight down to the, what's the word, concourse area, like the I actually can only remember the word in German, but like the on, like just off the pitch, like round the side of the pitch, and then that's where I started doing most of my, that was a rubbish bit of blabbing there, but you get what I mean, and that's where I started doing most of my content for the match day, and I get prepared for that. So that could be anything from just getting the vibe from the stadium, the atmosphere from the stadium, getting like what's happening, if there's fans there. Unfortunately, it's not going to be a couple of games. But if the fans are there, get the kind of reaction of how they are. This is for people who want to experience the match as well. So you're trying to get both those vibes, as well as being informative, because it's different to you guys. You guys are more like, you've got so many other games on. But for me, I've got to have a couple of other like boring posts, just like what you were saying about everything's got to have. Some, like what we're saying about everything's got to have something. Sometimes I need to put a boring post because it has to be an informative thing. So you need to get the mix between those and them. And then you're running around the pitch trying to get all these things of kick, the lads coming out to train, the lads just training, the goalkeeper doing something, finding international players where they are in the pitch. If they're doing something exciting, catch them. And then you've got to run upstairs and get yourself ready for a live ticker. So that's kind of self-explanatory, of course. You run through the game, but you're also doing it on like a few different platforms. You're having to do it quickly. You don't want, like, you personally don't want kicker to tell you someone else to score before you do, and things like that. You don't want these times. You've got to do everything to extreme. You are the person who has to provide this information. You've got to make sure that your live ticker is completely informative, as well as not being so long to read. Things like that. You don't want to bore people, you don't want, and you also don't want this, like, I'm going to change how I did my life ticket actually this year. Like, it's not going to be like minute by minute and stuff like that. It's going to be a bit different. I just think that it's quite a long process. You have to wait for pictures, like George mentioned earlier. I know personally our pictures don't come in until like 20 minutes into the game usually, so you're sitting there going, we scored two goals in the first 10 minutes and there's nothing to use. So it's really difficult. That there's pressure there because you're thinking, well, Bobby Glasgow's just scored a cracking double, but nobody knows how it's been gone in from back home because you can't see it. So that's pressure itself. Kickoff, full time happens, sorry, and then you end up, you've got so many things to think of after the match to show what happened during the match. You have to show important, exciting parts for the match. You've got to write a match report. You've got, well, I translate mine. You've got to translate this. You've got to translate the post-match interview. You're there for hours. And you've also just got other things just kind of come into it. So it's like one of those days that you just, it sounds stressful the way I said it. I think I feel like I stumbled a lot because I was actually feeling the effect of what it's like on a match day, because it is just one of those days where your mind goes this, okay. So that's how I thought it would be best to tell it. You tell it like it is and people will fully understand. It's the most stressful day ever, but it's also the most enjoyable day as well, because at the end of the day, you get to watch a game of football and it's something we all love.
That was an emotional rollercoaster. I know myself how long it takes you to finish up after the game, because I remember I was waiting for you after the Nuremberg game, and I thought I'll just have a couple of beers while I wait for Roy to finish work. I think I was not in the best way by the time you found me, to be fair, because I was probably waiting for you for about 3.5 hours or something. But yeah, nonetheless, I think a lot of people would have found that very interesting to hear what goes on, because it's probably a lot different to what is kind of what Chris and I do, but it's very interesting to know what goes on more at the club side as opposed to the league, more universal stuff that Chris and I do. So, Chris, what does the start of a match day look like for you in terms of the job?
It's different because on a Friday it's different, on a Saturday it's different, and on a Sunday it's different. Saturdays are always my favourite. Sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say I don't know why I asked that question as if I don't know that they're all different. I was going to say Saturday's like the epitome of it for me because you've got all the games going on at the same time. So let's take a Saturday because that's probably like the best example.
Yeah, I mean, they all collectively count as the Bundesliga match there. So, you know, we can say that they're all. But no, the Saturdays are intense, but they are, like, for me, like, what makes it all worth it because, like, that's when I think a lot, like, that's when you know at least your audience, however many of them are watching at that moment, like, that's when they're watching. That's why they follow the account, like, the. And unless people just love social media, like they're interested in football. I'm not saying that every single person that follows our account is like the biggest Bundesliga fan ever, but like, you know, that's when people are most engaged and that's when the stories come out of. And I think it's like our job to tell those stories as best as we can. And, you know, sometimes things get missed and, you know, I always feel bad for like a specific player when, you know, if they've just scored their like first goal or they've scored like an amazing goal and like maybe we haven't covered it in the way that we should have. Like normally we like, even if we haven't covered it like at that moment on a Saturday, we do go back to it and cover it. But they're just crazy because it's all the build up. And then while it's going on, it's genuinely like a kind of roller coaster thrill ride, like Roy put it before, but that's just so like fun to be on because you're part of it, you know. If you, especially like we were saying earlier, like if you can kind of come up with something good while that's all going on, like, you know, you hit the jackpot on that one. With the games itself, like I normally have like what I try to do personally for the Bundesliga is pick the game that less people will be watching. Personally, most people will normally, if Bayern or Dortmund are playing at 3:30 on a Saturday, they'll go for those games. And, you know, sometimes if it's their Klassiker or they're against Gladbach or Frankfurt or someone like that, then like it is worth putting on. But me personally, I like to try and put on the kind of the game to try and find some stories on. Now, sometimes that can work and sometimes that can backfire. In recent weeks, that's backfired. As George will tell you, last two games, I've watched both of Foot's games. And they've both been 0-0. So like, you know, you're not getting like the kind of the fun out of the match day like you should be. But for me, like personally, like I just want to kind of find the story that maybe like no one else is getting so that, you know, we're ahead. We're ahead of say a Kicker, a Bild, or, you know, all these, you know, ESPN, all these platforms that 433, all these platforms that like share our content. I want to, as a kind of personal competition to myself, I want to get to things before they do. And sometimes you just have to look in places that you maybe won't find it. You know, once all the games are all done, then suddenly it's just that rush of like, oh my God, like I can't believe all that's over. But then instantly you can't think about like how crazy that was for 120 minutes, 90 minutes, whatever. Because you're on to a next game. If you're on like a late on a Saturday, you're on to the late kickoff. Now, George, obviously you had the crazy Saturday match day experience, which are always like the biggest learning curves just over the weekend where, you know, you cover six games at once or five games at once. And then instantly you're onto another game, with the craziness like Frankfurt Dortmund was at the weekend. You know, you finish that game and suddenly like that's almost your whole shift gone. And you're like, did I do anything? Like, and of course you did things and you've done loads, but because it's been so crazy busy, everything you've tweeted, everything you've hit send on Instagram, every highlight you've uploaded, like you're spending 2 to 5 minutes on all those things and you're moving on to the next one that, you know, it's hard to kind of like take stock of it at the end. I'm always like the most exhausted after a Saturday. But like in a good way, it's good exhaustion. It's like, you know, the USP of the product. So, you know,
it's the time to do it.
Yeah, I always definitely find them the most rewarding, and like you said, it's kind of is when everyone that's kind of when everyone tunes in. Everyone's be looking out for our posts because we are literally reporting on the games. I think one thing that's difficult is when you're working on a Sunday. So when you're working on a Saturday, you'll have the games that kick off at 3:30, and they'll finish around 5:15, and then you've got your game that the top. Game, the top spiel, which usually starts at 6:30. So yeah, you get all those games done. You have to get all your highlights out, your reaction to everything, and then you've got generally about 45 minutes, an hour to focus on the next game, and that's all right. You kind of have a second to take stock of everything. You move on to your next game. So on Saturday, we did all the games, and then Chris left me for his romantic second year anniversary with his girlfriend. In Berlin, and I was doing that game. But that was fine. On a Sunday, however, the way that the games are scheduled is that you have one game at 2:30, and then you have one game at 4:30. So you do not have the hour break in between that you usually have on a Saturday. So if you can imagine, it's usually about a 10 to 15 minute gap where you have to, where one game finishes and another game starts, and you typically. Well, you can sometimes be by yourself, or you're responsible for one platform. If you do the midweek games, then you'll probably be by yourself. So you have to, in about 15 minutes, get the reaction out on the stories, Instagram feed, Twitter, highlights, then move on to the next game, get the graphics ready for the next game, get the stories ready for the next game. And that is the most absolute manic 15 minutes of your life. But
like if you don't mind me like say like it's I think it's only like mad if you let it make you mad, but I hadn't done Sundays for a while, but I've recently been doing them again, and I did like the Sunday at the weekend and the Cologne game, Köln. I've lived here long enough, I have to say Köln. In the Köln game against who the fuck were they playing again on the weekend? Who were they playing?
Hertha,
yeah, that's it. So it gets to like towards the end of that game, and Hertha pull one back, it's 2-1. And then Thielmann obviously got the winner and everything, so it's a bit crazy at the end of that game. But like during that game, you've got the Bochum build up for their game against Wolfsburg, and like, you know, that there isn't that time. There is such a like short time window that if you like, you would drive yourself nuts if you're trying to like keep to everything. So like what I did, like I still, for example, this is so like technical and like shit that people won't care about, but like I was posted, I had the, during the Köln game, I was getting the Bochum pre-match videos ready during the game, and then sending it out like towards the end of the Köln game, and then like Thielmann's getting the winner, and like, you know, like on stories, maybe it does look like a little bit odd that like, oh, like why have you put another game before the other one? Like, you know, it's not full time on the other one. How am I supposed to understand? But like the way I thought about it just in this instance is that like, well, maybe like 5 to 10 people are going to be like, I don't get this. I don't understand your product. But like most people at that moment are either watching the Bundesliga or they're not. And what you are at least sending them is links on how they can fucking watch the game. Or if they don't want to watch the game, they can keep up to date via Instagram, via the website, via, you know, like there is a way of them keeping up to date. It's not like you've like just stopped bothering kind of covering the game before, if you know what I mean. This is all very boring. Sorry to like
no,
anyone
can,
that's fallen asleep already, but.
I disagree. I think you said that people find it boring, but I think this is the point that I made earlier, that people assume, and there's completely right to assume, or right to assume, but understandable to assume this, that when you see your match day feed on Instagram and socials from the Bundesliga, Hartsfall, whatever sports account that might be, whatever team it is you follow, people, I mean, if you support a team, the main go-to is going to be that team's Twitter account, that team's Instagram account to get your news or whatever. And you kind of see it as this, you know, this this vehicle of just this drives out content. That's just this seamless, motion of getting out content, getting out updates, videos, pictures, interviews, blah, blah, blah. And you never really stop to think, how does this thing actually function? Is often it's just one or two people behind it that are working the absolute asses off to make it seem like that. And I'm not saying that's a credit to us, but that's like it's a credit to the people that work in this industry, not just ourselves, that we are able to make people think that. I mean, if it was a complete shit show the whole time and everything was out at the wrong time, then people would probably realize that, oh, there's just like one or two people doing this right now. But I think that is the fact, it's kind of in our remit to make that whole process seem so seamless, because obviously no one who's watching the Köln game then watching the Bochum game is thinking, well, whoever's doing the Bundesliga socials is going to have a very short time to get out all of the build-up to the next game, was also reacting to the game that's just gone.
Because in the grand scheme of things, like 2 hours later when like both of the games are finished, it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter. Like, it's just in that moment where obviously you've got that short time in between games, but it's that's completely it.
Exactly. And I think especially when in the digital age that we're in now, everyone wants their news to be as, I think, firstly bite-sized. They want it to be received. They want to be able to receive it quickly. They sort of want it now, and they want it to be just as accessible as it can be for them. So I think, I don't know, you've probably been in the industry longer than Roy and myself to be able to say if you've kind of noticed a difference or any kind of discernible change from when you first got involved in sport. I mean, we said at the start, German football media, I think this is actually completely relevant to any sports media, any media in general, and any sort of change that you think you've really noticed or felt the impact in.
I think since when I started, which was, just over 2 years ago now, TikTok wasn't such a big thing as it is now, and therefore Instagram Reels wasn't even a thing. So that shows you how much things have changed. Like, Reels are some of the most viewed content on Instagram these days, and I know fuck all about TikTok. So I know it's like Reels, but like, and it came along first, but like, I never got downloaded TikTok. I probably should have, being in the position that I'm in, but like, it's just, it was never really like my thing. I can't believe that like, out of the three of us, I'm the most experienced out of us three, because like, I don't feel it in any way. I still feel like constantly like learning on the job, and it changes very regularly. And I'm sure in like 2 years' time, we'll be literally like talking about the new platform that's came along that's changed everything, and suddenly like no one uses Instagram or Twitter anymore, and people are talking about either of those two platforms in the same way that maybe you speak about Facebook now, George. But like, Facebook in itself, like, I don't use it half as much as I used to, but my parents use it twice as much as I used to. So like, there is still like a big market for it. It's quite funny seeing like kind of 40, 50, 60 year olds on Facebook, like, just some of the things that they say. I don't know if you get this with like messages from your parents, we're going completely off topic, but my dad will so often like finish messages with saying like, lots of love, dad. Like, he's like writing a card. I don't know, like, I still think like, in our position, there's like people accessing social media still for like the first time. It's taken like a lot of the older generation to kind of catch up with it after they spent a lot of time dismissing it for so many years and saying it's a thing for young people. Like, they're now all completely like in on it and sharing their conspiracy theories to one another via the platforms. I don't know, it's constantly like shifting, and like, if you're asking me to make a prediction, like, I literally could just say that like, it will look, the only prediction I can make, which isn't as bold as some of your Runder predictions last week, but the
my prediction is just it won't look how it looks right now. So whatever you see right now in front of you is Twitter, as the big platforms, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, Instagram stories, all of that shit. Like they just won't look the same. They're all shape-shifting social media platforms, and you know, either something new will come along or something crazy, or that they'll, you know, reinvent themselves in their own way, and like football media will have to adapt to it. But like football media, just from the Bundesliga perspective, like I know that when we first started doing reels, you know, 18 months ago, no one had a kind of clue. I'm not saying from the Bundesliga side, but like what they were going to be and what they would turn into. And now you, like, I'll do a reel for the Bundesliga Insta account, and I'm counting, or I'm hoping big time for loads of likes, loads of interactions. Not that I base my performance on any of that at all. Like, I know that if I've written a good post, like, it's a good post. It doesn't matter whether 20,000 people have liked it or 100,000 people. Like, if your content's good, your content's good. But, like, you know, on the flip side of that, if you do a reel, like, I am looking for, you know, big numbers. You know, I'm not the Bundesliga. It doesn't make me change anything about my life in particular if they don't get the numbers they want. But, like, I also work for them, and I want my thing to do well, and I'm sure you do, George. You know, we're a bit self-centered as social media people because we're all kind of, especially for the last 2 years, just been like locked up in our rooms, in our living rooms, or working from beds or whatever. Like, so I really rambled on there, but yeah.
No, I completely agree. I remember when Reels came out, because, and I remember that it was like so obvious, because obviously like Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, they're all part of this meta like Facebook thing. So Instagram Reels is obviously the Instagram answer to TikTok, but it's like, so how do you, what does that look like on an Instagram interface, and what is the purpose of doing that? How are these brands gonna use them their best? And it's like Twitter Spaces is another thing I imagine is probably gonna get more and more popular as a way to sort of host discussions, you know. And it's probably, we've never hosted one on the Bundesliga account. I don't really know how that would work, to be honest, but you can imagine that something like that is gonna be the one to take the lead almost. Because if you'd have said 3 years ago, whatever, that there'll be this thing on Instagram where you just constantly flick through and just watch random videos that pop up that you've not even asked for, that doesn't sound so appealing. But that's probably one of Instagram's most marketable features now, like, at the moment. So it's, I personally find it interesting. And Roy, I mean, you're a rags to riches story yourself. You started just plugging the buttons, you know, pushing the camera around, and now you're the Haarsfeld admin, the Haarsfeld Fußball god. So you've seen it all levels. I mean, you're probably quite well positioned to suggest where things might go, where if you think there's a certain direction that the football media is going in, or I don't know. Please enlighten us.
Actually, the thing is, I've actually got a very similar opinion to Chris. That I wanted to touch on what you said anyway, was that everything changes far too quickly for us, and we are always learning on the job. You're never ready. I don't think you're ever fully qualified for a job, if that makes sense. So, like, do we know what's going to come from this? Is this you just wanting me to get the NFT story out of yourself? Or, like, you just want someone to bring it up so you can then talk about it? Potentially, we could do it. But, that's a good example of, we don't know what's coming next. We don't know what's the next best big trend? I mean, TikTok's obviously the newest one, like Chris was talking about. That's something that I would never even have thought of. I don't even know why, but when it started becoming big in the lockdown, you looked at it, but you never just thought of like football teams using it. I don't know why. I personally didn't have that. Then all of a sudden, I think Wolves were one of the biggest teams to use it first. They were very good at using it anyway. And then all of a sudden, boom, 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 all these teams are coming out, and they've got a TikTok channel, and they're doing all these different things, and they're looking at different ways, which is amazing because it's expanded again. So, like, in the space of, it's been 2 years since the pandemic started. But, you know, like, it's been like 2 years since, like, TikTok was nothing in football, social media, and now it's a massive thing. There was a time that apps weren't a thing, like football teams having apps. That wasn't a thing. They're now massive. Everyone goes on the, like, their apps just to see any sort of information. So it just generally depends on what's going to come next. Like I like Chris's answer. I kind of want to steal it, but I can't. But like we don't know. Like we don't know what it's going to look like, but it will look different. I like that. Like that's perfect way to sum it up. Like what do you look at to, like, George? Because obviously you've got this. Like, you might have an idea when you're provoking this question and you want an answer to this that maybe we're just not giving you. But like I in my head, generally, there's nothing that we can say for definite is going to change. Other than the only thing I've noticed recently is it's this hero status that's changed in the last year or two that's what's made social media, and like especially like, it's something you guys do a lot. It's just that's what it's changed to. Like people want to see what Patrick Schick's having a really good season. People want to see what Patrick Schick's done in that game. They want to see his celebration. They don't want to see a picture of Yanis Horn just running like on a run, you know what I mean? I'm trying to think of players that's not that relevant.
It's really harsh on Yanis Horn.
Like, it actually really is harsh on Yanis Horn. But I don't know why
you singled him out specifically as well.
Because he came back this weekend, like right, okay. Kellen, and I just remember that game, and then I had to choose an FC Kellen player, of course. But you know what I mean though, like you want to be seen, like are you going to click in a post that's join another player? I can think of another player. Do you want to click in a post where it's Patrick Schick doing his celebration? Or do you want to see Cedric Eaton, who's just left to go back to Rangers, to be fair, for greater force, doing absolutely nothing on the pitch? Like, that's what it's became. Like, no one cares about the non-story. People want to know who's the form player. They want Lewandowski, they want Haaland, they want Bellingham, they want Schick at the moment. That's like the main guys at the moment that everyone wants to see. So that's something that's changed as well. That might change again. I might go back to, like, people might be more interested in video content more again, which has kind of definitely changed, I think, in Twitter recently. It's just, it's hard to explain, George. It's such a hard question, and I think that shows how difficult our jobs are, that we don't know what's going to come next week, never mind what's going to come in 2 years. Has that helped answer your question?
Yeah, no, I don't have an answer. I think it's fascinating. I think, yeah, there's something quite exciting about admitting that we don't actually really know what we're the ones that are working in this position, and we are always, you always feel like you could be a little bit behind the trend, or that you're always like reaching or striving to be, you know, they said, I mean, I don't know if that's true about Wolves or whatever, but you know, I remember it was Roma were like one of the first big like Instagram like admin type like Twitter accounts. Like they were the first like Twitter account that wasn't used for like just posting their results. It was kind of like focused more on international interaction and stuff. And that sort of I don't want to call it admin culture, but do you know what I mean? It's kind of the more interactive stuff, the kind of stuff you see with the Borussia Dortmund international account and stuff. But I think another thing I've noticed in sort of and of course the Haas Foul English account, of course. One thing that's probably come out in the past like 1 or 2 years is the emergence of content creators. So like specific people that have previously worked by themselves as like YouTubers are now being employed by, I mean, I think when you look at the English national team, like you see Josh Denzel, who was on Love Island, earned his fame through Love Island, is essentially a personality, but now he's pretty much the main presenter for the English national team's social.
Is he? That's talk about falling upwards. Like, Christ, I've never watched Love Island in my life, and he gets to go and chat with the England players. Like, that doesn't seem to make sense to me. Like, what else has he done?
Well, this is the thing. So he obviously managed to establish himself as a personality, because obviously coming out of Love Island, you get a big following, and he's kind of managed to use his personality. He did a lot of other media sort of appearances and whatnot, and YouTube and vlogs, and that was something that the English national team picked up on as something that would be, instead of having your standard trained journalist or media person that's gone to uni and whatnot, who's going to ask the more traditional questions or whatever, the more traditional personalities that you see that have a more kind of flamboyant character, like someone like Josh Denzel. I mean, even at Chelsea as well, the main presenters on the Chelsea socials are not people that have studied journalism at university and have kind of that the people that have set up their own YouTube channels. I mean, you look at like Chunks and like Young Philly, they're like they're kind of the future of where like football, like social is being presented from. I just think that's quite interesting because it's kind of so strange that like those football clubs especially are picking up on those like content creators to create their content for them. They're looking for the personality rather than this person is really good at asking questions or whatever. I think that's quite interesting. And you know, the elephant in the room, which there's really no point going too much into, is the NFT thing. I mean, Wolfsburg tweeted today on their official account they're setting up, they're going to be releasing their own set of NFTs. The Bundesliga is now in a partnership with the fantasy football NFT company SoRare, as is La Liga. Across the Premier League, Man City are, Rangers are, a lot of players are, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Reece James, they've all, John Terry. Yeah, exactly. And so this is something which to me seems to have only happened in the past 6 to 12 months, that all these players are changing their pictures to players of monkeys. And friend of the pod, Roy Hasbulla, he's got his own NFTs. And it's kind of crazy. And, you know, I'm not in any position to comment on how this will affect the league, affect football, but it is kind of an intrusive figure that's kind of burst onto the scene. And because it's an unregulated market at the moment, kind of feels like no one has any idea how big this could be.
But what is it, George? Explain to me, what is it?
An NFT.
I'll tell you how much my knowledge on NFTs goes, and then you can kind of like explain it to me after that. So, non-fungible token, is that what it stands for?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Right. Okay. And it's like a picture or a card or something, kind of like a FIFA card.
You can compare it to like a Topps card or whatever you could get, like a Panini.
Like a Top Trumps card. Or is that going too far back?
Like a Panini sticker.
Panini sticker, okay. Like a POG.
I don't know what that is.
You don't know what a POG is? Oh my God. Like, Roy, you must know what a POG is, right?
When you guys were going through that, I've actually had a scroll through on Wolfsburg on most of their accounts, and find me a positive comment or something that's not negative about Wolfsburg doing that.
Yeah, so this is the thing. So you were saying, Chris, what's good about it? I think the overwhelming kind of response from football fans is that there isn't much good about it. It's essentially, for me, it comes down to the fact that the Premier League's now finally decided to eventually ban betting sponsorships on TV and kit sponsorships, which to me seems like an all-round agreeable good thing. But then at the same time, you have players, like whole clubs like Man City, and you know, clubs in the Bundesliga like Wolfsburg, are now entering into this completely unregulated market, which is essentially a bit like betting, really. And it's not really something that people want. And it seems to me, if we're talking about Germany, if we want to talk more specifically about Germany here, seems to run parallel to the idea of 50+1, which we all know is so sacred in German football. Because, I mean, if you look at the Super League and the reaction that got, that's kind of showed that the power of social media, and that was able to bring stops to that very quickly. And it's something that seems quite intrusive and quite uncomfortable to me about the fact that, like I said, like you just said, Roy, people don't really want this. People are aware that football fans are quite impressionable, and they see their favorite football players selling them these things that they might pay with money they don't really have, and buy things that, like you say, don't really appear to exist. That is something that's quite worrying for football, really. But unfortunately, it does seem to be becoming bigger and bigger. And you know, you can't. I mean, Wolfsburg's not a good example because they do not adhere to 50+1. But you kind of wonder if a club like FC Köln, like Karlsruhe, like Borussia Dortmund, like any club that fits within the 50 plus one model, if they were to start selling their own NFTs, would that have to go down to a club vote? Like if like as myself as a member of 1860, I get to vote on these things. I'm not sure, because this has come out of the blue, out of nowhere. But as interesting as that is, we are not a podcast about NFTs, cryptocurrency, blockchain, Web3, any of those things that I don't entirely understand what that means. So we'll stick to the German football and what we know. And my two co-hosts tonight, they do know what they're talking about, and that's how to work in the world of social media in German football. So I think we'll just finish off by, we'll just ask both of you if you could, I don't want to get too Piers Morgan life stories on the whole thing, but if you can maybe say to a younger version of yourself or someone who was in a similar position to you wanting to eventually get into doing sort of what you do now, what advice you would give them, what advice you would give them.
You want me to go? I would say, like, either to anyone listening that's interested in getting in it, or like you said to my younger self, I'd probably just say, like, be patient. I think, like, there's a lot of, especially kind of anyone under 30, there's this kind of thought that, like, we need to get everything, like, instantaneously, more so for the younger generation. I, like, sound patronizing when I say that, but more so for, like, younger people now that have had social media throughout their lives, I kind of only had it halfway through, like, teenagers and stuff like that. So I'd say be patient. Like, you're not, just because if you've sent, like Roy said earlier, like if you sent 10 emails out to different clubs trying to do some sort of work for them, and you've got only one response, and that one response has said, like, no, thanks for your email, but, like, maybe some other time, like, obviously that's going to feel disheartening. I've been in that position before, and it's felt disheartening. You're like, oh, why am I even bothering? No one wants my thing. But, like, you do just have to get, like, lucky, right place, right time. And by sending out those emails to all those clubs or sports programs or whoever you're sending emails to, like, I would say, like, you know, the more, not so much the more you send, but the more quality emails that you send, the more likely you're going to get. And don't just stick to emails, stick to phone calls, you know, like, try and get lunches with people, like, even if it's just to pick someone's brains, like, you know, offer to, like, buy their lunch or, like, go for lunch with them, go for a coffee even, like, it's even cheaper. And, you know, just to get, like, an hour of someone's time, like, people have got time. And if, you know, if you're passionate enough and you're keen enough, and you want to demonstrate that to someone so that they'll keep you in mind, then I would say go for that. In terms of, like, football content, I'd say, like, you know, read up on the stuff that you're interested in, but also stuff you're not interested in. I mean, I can't say, like, even 3 years ago, I was like, oh my God, I really want to work for the Bundesliga's social media account. Like, this is a dream of mine. Of course, I'm very, very grateful to do it now, and you know, I know the fortunate position I'm in, and I'm sure you do, George, as well, but, like, and same with you as well, Roy, you know, doing Hamburg's account, like, you know, we're in very, very fortunate positions. But I think the difference between someone being good or average and great, and I'm not saying I'm specifically great, but I know that, like, I can at least say that I've given it my best shot. When I first started with Bundesliga, and every single moment from then up until now, I've made it my kind of effort and ambition to know more about the product. So that's the history. That's who plays for what team. Like, if you'd have asked me 2 years ago, like, all the players that, like to name Freiburg starting 11 as an example, I'd have maybe got one. And now I know they're doing really well this year. But, like, even, like, last year, you know, I could have named, like, the whole team and subs bench. You know, that kind of thing. Like, it's all just kind of like learning your product. You know, learning what you're interested in and kind of improving, and, you know, making notes and continuing to improve and wanting to improve. Like, I'm 2 years in, and I don't think I'm the best social media person out there. I'm quite a competitive soul, so I want to be like at least like the best Bundesliga social person there. And, you know, I've got you to compete with George, who, you know, you're much younger and, you know, you've got newer ideas that probably my brain isn't capable of anymore.
I think it's so true what you're saying. I think kind of what you're alluding to is kind of something that I always have in me is that you, firstly, you need to be quite humble in what you do as well, even though we've reached relatively great heights, us all in what we do. I mean, Chris probably won't say it, but when I started in the position, I didn't really entirely know what I was doing. I think the main way I managed to sell myself was how keen I was and how I think I showed a willingness to learn. And I'm not saying I'm especially good at my job right now, but I wouldn't be at the ability I am right now if I hadn't have learned from everyone in the team, like, yeah, first and foremost, like yourself, Chris, of like every shift just trying to learn something. And I think amongst that, it's like I said, I know we were complaining earlier about, oh, we can't switch off, we're always checking kicker, we're always, you know, we can't. But I think part of it, and it makes it most enjoyable if you do immerse yourself in it. And although that might mean that you finish your shift and you can't completely stop thinking about the Bundesliga, but I think there is a part of it that's like, if you fully immerse yourself in it, if you fully kind of, it's kind of difficult not to throw too many cliches out there or sound sort of too hyperbolic, but if you kind of start to live and breathe the club that you're representing, or, I mean, Roy is actually, is that Haarsfell top underneath the Haarsfell jacket you've got on right now, Roy? Or no, just Adidas, still Adidas though, still the right sponsorship.
I was just going to say that, like, Roy and Hamburg are like probably also constantly thinking about the Bundesliga as well.
Exactly. So, well, dreaming perhaps. So yeah, but I think there's certain value to just, yeah, immersing yourself. What would you add to that, Roy?
I think the biggest thing in my learning of getting to maybe where I am now, which is something I wouldn't have said recently. I don't really like talking about myself in that way, but recently I've just kind of decided, like, I think it was actually last week when I went back to work and I just walked into the Volkspark Stadion and I just went, fuck, like, this is cool. I don't really like doing that usually, but one thing that I always picked up on that, I'm not gonna lie, I actually like didn't like not listen to, but something some like people have always told me is your networking is probably the biggest thing you could ever do. And I always faffed it off. I was like, I don't need to speak to everyone, but like, you don't realize how many people you speak to. And I got so many jobs just through speaking to people, just knowing people who knew other people who end up recommending the other people. And I think that's probably a big thing. Talk to anyone you see. It sounds a bit silly, but like, no one's going to tell you to fuck off, like, let's be honest. Like, talk to anyone you see, anyone you have an interest in. Like, there's, I know for certain, like, I don't know if you like me telling this, George, but like, you messaged me saying you had this idea for a project, and like, I still don't know what that project really was, because we ended up just like telling you to come on the podcast one night. But you know, like, you were just like, you're a bit younger than me, and you just messaged me going, how have you done this? And I looked at it and went, who does he think I am? Like, generally, but like, just don't feel like that's weird. I've messaged people before. I've messaged, like, I remember before I got my job, I messaged people like Johnny Walsh that does the FC Köln one, just to ask him for advice. He gave me a little bit of advice on how he got his job, for instance. So like, don't, like, when we had Derek Ray on the podcast, at the end of it, I sat and spoke to him for about 10 minutes, just asking him how to get a job in Germany, because I hadn't had any jobs yet. You know, like, it's just getting that opportunity to speak to someone and just taking it. I think that's probably one of the most important things I've taken away from it. Like, I got my job. I'm not saying I didn't qualify for my job. I didn't get my job because I didn't. I'm not good. I didn't say I've not got it because I was good enough. I spoke to Robert. Robert was leaving his job, and that's how things work. You don't always just get it by finding on our website and going, I'm going to apply for this. They were more interested in me because Robert knew me. Robert then recommended me, for instance, and then they took an interest in me then. So I always think it's just all who you talk to.
If it's fair play, if you made it this far, I'm sure we've done a lot of babbling on. So, but once again, thanks very much for listening, and we hope we've been of some help. And we'll catch you next week.